Good evening. Good to have you all. We are in 2 Samuel chapter 13, but let's take a look at the end of chapter 12. 2 Samuel chapter 13. I hate this chapter, I'll be honest. It's just junk. It is. I mean, it's no slam on the Bible. It's just the story that we have to go through to get to the truth. It's okay to say that. I don't particularly like reading Satan talking Job either. And I don't like to teach from Revelation. I'm not looking forward to that. It's blood. It's death. It's how do you preach that and expect anyone to go away excited? I mean, people always want you to preach Revelation, but it's depressing. Come on. So I like to give me encouragement. Get enough drab in my life. So anyway, before we get to incest in chapter 13. Quick overview when we, in chapter 12, 2 Samuel chapter 12, as you know, David has had an illicit adulterous affair with Bathsheba. Their first child from that union has died. He was, or could have been, at war with Joab, who was fighting the Ammonites, who had come against Israel when David had sent just peace offerings in the previous chapter, and they started a big war. David pushed him back there, and then in chapter 12, Joab goes out, and we're just going to finish off the Ammonites. They go out, David doesn't. He finds another woman, and this time it's adulterous. He had many wives, none of which are called adultery, but because Bathsheba had a husband, and he took her from that husband, he became an adulterer. He killed her husband, as you know. All the while, the army is camped against the Ammonites, and so David, his sin is exposed by Nathan the prophet, and as you know the story, David repents of it, but God says, I've forgiven you, but there are ramifications for your sin. As the chapter closes, the scene goes back to Ammon, where Joab has surrounded the city. We see something about Joab here in chapter 12, verse 26, to the end of the chapter, is that he fought against Rabbah of the sons of Ammon and captured the royal city. Joab sent messengers to David and said, I have fought against Rabbah, and I have captured the city of Waters, as it was known. Therefore, gather the rest of the people together and camp against the city and capture it, or I will capture the city myself, and it will be named after me. In other words, Joab is saying, David, come on out. I've got everything in order. You go in, finish it off. You get the credit because you're the king. Joab could have done it himself. We see something of Joab here. Joab's an interesting character. Sometimes he looks terribly evil. Sometimes in situations like this, he looks extremely humble and respectful of his king and his God. They took the crown in verse 30 that was on the king's head in Ammon, put it on David's head. Verse 31, he also brought out the people who were in it, brought out the people of Ammon. Now a king at this point, when you capture a city, you can kill everybody. David, he puts them, set them under saws. Does that sound, anything about that sound good? Sharp iron instruments and iron axes, and made them pass through the brick kiln. And thus he did to all the cities of the sons of Ammon. Then David and all the people returned to Jerusalem. Chapter 13, verse 1. As we look at on the overhead. Now it was after this that Absalom, the son of David, had a beautiful sister whose name was Tamar. And Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Well, these children of David come from different mothers because David has several wives at this point. And so now what we're going to see in chapter 13 and following is everything God had told him before. Is David, your sin is forgiven you. You will not die for your sin. But you will, what does he say? The sword will never depart from your family. Scary then. Now we're going to watch it unfold. That's why I say it's not, these aren't fun stories to go through, but there is something to be taken from it. Quite a bit, I should say. So we meet this young man, Absalom. He's the son of David. He's the third-born son of David, by the way. And there's a sister, Tamar, who is the real sister of Absalom, and their mother is named Maacah. David married this woman from the southern region of Israel. The king of Geshur that's his daughter. David has married her. His firstborn son is named Amnon. Secondborn son is named, they're either the same person or they're two different boys, Kileab or Daniel. And he has this son through Abigail, who seems to be the best woman that David was married to, and yet this is not the woman that will carry on the messianic line. At any rate, this Kileab, or Daniel, was the second-born son. Don't know anything about the child. Must have died. So the prominent ones of the firstborn son, Amnon, and by the way, as you know, firstborn son is heir to the throne if dad dies. So Amnon's the heir apparent. Absalom's the third-born son, and we don't know about that second-born son, and there's a young woman named Tamar. Note there, the name Tamar, and Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Now, this is his half-sister. Amnon, his sister, they share the same father, David, but they have different mothers. So Tamar is Amnon's half-sister, and he loved her. We're going to see later that loved should be in quotation marks, right? Amnon was so frustrated because of his sister, Tamar, that he made himself ill, for she was a virgin. And it seemed hard for Amnon to do anything to her. You can see the scheming nature of Amnon here. He wants to be with his sister. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimea. By the way, Shimea was David's brother. We read about Shimea, also known as Shammah. He was the third-born son. He was one of the sons paraded in front of Samuel to see who might be the king. But this was not the son that became king, as you know. David did, kind of the runt in the family. But his third-born, his third oldest brother, Shammah, had a son named Jonadab, so this would make him Amnon's cousin, and he's also his friend, an advisor in the royal court. Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimea, David's brother, and Jonadab was a very shrewd man. How many of your translations say shrewd or wise? How many of them say wise? Crafty. Have you ever, in our modern world, using the word shrewd and crafty, is that a compliment? Crafty. Crafty fella. If somebody's telling you about the pastor of Harvest Bible Church, yeah, Lance Wald, he's a crafty fella, would you go, wow, we need to visit that church? Sounds like a man of high character. Crafty, shrewd. How many of you have read, if you haven't, I'm going to shame you, so you might as well raise your hand anyway, Pilgrim's Progress. Pilgrim's Progress. Okay, the second greatest book ever written next to the Bible. Read Pilgrim's Progress. You can even listen to it on DVD or on the internet. But there's a person in there, his name is Worldly Wise. Worldly Wise. You know worldly wise people. They know how to make their way in this world real well. They know how to make money. They know how to influence people, undercut people, get their way. That's Jonadab. And he is a friend of Amnon. So we're going to see that Amnon, number one, in this passage, wants to be with his half-sister. That's a little bit... And then he's got a friend who's real shrewd, worldly wise, and now you know he's not being fed any good information. He said to him, "O son of the king," this is Jonadab speaking to Amnon, "O son of the king, why are you so depressed morning after morning? Will you not tell me?" Then Amnon said to him, "I'm in love with Tamar, the sister of my brother Absalom." Jonadab then said to him, "Lie down in your bed and pretend to be ill. When your father comes to see you, say to him, 'Please let my sister Tamar come and give me some food to eat, and let her prepare the food in my sight, that I may see it and eat from her hand.'" How many of you, if you've never read about Amnon to this point, or assume that you are just now reading him, do you think he's a pretty good guy? This guy's a pervert. This guy is I think, as bad as they come. He also has surrounded himself, as I said, with bad friends, as bad people normally do. What he's after, it's likely that this is not his first rodeo. A man that wants to sleep with his half-sister is a man who has been around, probably, has seen things. He's a spoiled brat prince. We're going to see, I've underlined certain passages in here, you'll see. He's got his own house. Now, he's about 20 years old. We know that David had him when it says in the end of 1 Samuel, 2 Samuel chapter 3, that David had children when he was in Hebron, and he's about in his 20th year of his reign. So Amnon's at least 20 years old. Absalom maybe around the same age because he's having children with different women. Probably Absalom's about 18. Tamar may be right around that age. She could be as young as 15. We don't know exactly, but they're all born about 20 years, 15 to 20 years prior. And you see that this man, this 20-year-old guy, has his own house. He's a spoiled brat. He gets whatever he wants. You're going to see that throughout this passage. And David wasn't a very good father. In fact, he was a lousy father, which is interesting because he was such a great king. Verse 5, Jonadab said to him, "Lie down on your bed, pretend to be ill." So he's got this friend that's showing him how to lie to get what he wants. Verse 6, So Amnon lay down and pretended to be ill. When the king came to see him, now this says something about the king. Apparently, when the children were sick, David would come visit them. He comes back, comes to see him. He hears that his son is sick. He is the heir to the throne. Amnon said to the king, David's probably, just imagine the scene. This would be a regular scene in our own day, in some sense. Son, you okay? What's wrong with you? I don't know, Dad. Well, can I get you anything? Yeah, now that you ask, send Tamar over. She makes these really good pieces of bread, probably. Well, David's a little bit taken aback. He says, please send my sister Tamar and come and make me a couple of cakes in my sight that I may eat from her hand. Then David sent to the house for Tamar, saying, go now to your brother's house, Amnon's house, and prepare food for him. So he probably just convinced David, in my opinion here, well, let me ask you this. How many parents do you know? Let me ask it another way. When some child commits a heinous crime and you see it on TV and they interview the mama, what does she normally say? He's such a good boy. He could never do this. Blind as a bat, mom. Typically, moms, dads, blind to our own children's deficiencies. David seems to be totally clueless, and this is the first sign that he has no clue what's going on. He's got to know something about Amnon, that he's a spoiled brat, that he's a pervert, but he has no suspicion necessarily that he wants to be with Tamar. That is out there at best. He sent Tamar to the house, saying, go now to your brother's house, Amnon. I underlined it just to say that each one of these little prince sons has their own house, and prepare food for him. He doesn't ask her. He doesn't ask Tamar, would you mind? Could you? Hey, your brother's sick. Would you go do it? He really likes the way you bake those bread cakes. He just sends her. So Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house, and he was lying down. And she took dough, kneaded it, made cakes in his sight, and baked the cakes. She took the pan and dished them out before him, but he refused to eat. And Amnon said, have everyone go out from me. Now that means Tamar didn't go there alone. She may have taken her own entourage. Amnon may have had some of his own men there as well, but whoever, they weren't alone. Probably wouldn't have allowed it. I only read one background commentary that would even comment on the possibility or the probability that it was unheard of that men and women be alone, even if they were brother and sister, especially if they were half-brother and sister, because there was always the potential of this garbage happening. I looked for it everywhere. I only saw one person that said it. It seems like it's more of a common sense thing, so it's not often recorded in every commentary you read. Anyway, so everyone went out from him. Verse 10, so Amnon said to Tamar, bring the food into the bedroom that I may eat from, and it really just means the inner room, is the Hebrew word, that I may eat from your hand. Tamar's got to be thinking, well, okay, that seems odd, but she does it. She took the cakes which she had made and brought them into the bedroom to her brother Amnon. When she brought them to him to eat, he took hold of her and said to her, come lie with me, my sister. By the way, took hold is to seize her. It's not just he grabbed her, he seized her, he grabbed her. But she answered him, no, my brother, she knows what he's up to. Do not violate me, for such a thing is not done in Israel. Do not do this disgraceful thing. As for me, where could I get rid of my reproach? So in the midst of this struggle, she's reasoning with him. She hasn't, I can just, at least the best I can come up with is, while he's trying to bring her in, she's pushing away. He may have her in a body hold, and she's just saying, please think about what you're doing. Think about what would happen. Be reasonable. As for me, where could I get rid of my reproach? And as for you, you will be like one of the fools in Israel. In other words, you're heir to the throne. This will ruin you. Think about, she doesn't say it, but think about Dad. Now therefore, please speak to the king, for he will not withhold me from you. In other words, if you just ask Dad, if you must have me, he'll give me to you in marriage. Sick, I know, but this is her best she can come up with, poor thing. Verse 14, however, he would not listen to her. Since he was stronger than she, he violated her and lay with her. You know, the prospect of shame should deter us from all sin, from anything that that we know could bring shame on us. And that has. If you're a thinking person, you keep yourself, you think about what might bring you shame long before you find yourself in a position where you could compromise this way. He has not. She seems like this very squeaky clean, beautiful young woman who has thought about it. She thinks clearly. He doesn't. She tries reasoning. First of all, rape was frowned upon in Israel. It's not a death sentence. You know about the story that where the young lady, the sons of Jacob, the brothers, what was her name? Dinah. Dinah was taken and violated. And because Jacob didn't do anything, what happened? The brothers did. Dad, if you're not going to deal with this, we will. So they burned the entire city and killed everybody. The second, she knew she would have no future. You're going to ruin me. No man will want me. And you're going to ruin yourself as the future king. And so why not just make Dad, or ask Dad to make her your wife? You know, the problem with that is it's not allowed. It's incest by the days of Moses. And by the way, we're in 1000 B.C. The law of Moses was given in 1400 B.C. Abraham married his half-sister in 2000 B.C. So what was permissible in 2000 B.C., by the time the law was given in 1400, 600 years later, it was outlawed. Is it because it's a terrible, horrible thing? No. Brothers slept with sisters and propagated the human race from the beginning up until at least the time of Abraham. But it became, because of the way the genetic code is passed through the mother and the way the code gets all messed up, if one mother has this problem in her genetic makeup and they pass it to this child and those two children match those together, one of the big diseases that comes out of incest is, what is it, sickle cell anemia, I believe. It's just one of them. And so it's not so much that it's so horrible, though it is, and not so much that it's illegal in our day, but it's dangerous. And so the law says this. They didn't know that about the genetics at the time, but the law did forbid such a union. David, however, might have made an exception. It's also interesting to note that a woman who is raped in the Old Testament, if she yells and screams about it and tries to find help and no help comes to her, she is not held responsible and is not in any way to be disciplined. The man, however, who rapes if he rapes a virgin, Deuteronomy 20 or 22, if he rapes a virgin, he has to take her for his wife and he can never divorce her. If he rapes a woman who's either married or engaged to be married, death sentences for him. However, she is not engaged to be married, and it's possible David could give her to him, but again, verse 14, however, he would not listen to her. Since he was stronger than she, he violated her and lay with her. Then Amnon hated her with a very great hatred. Can you love someone 1 minute, hate him the next? Not if the love was real, can you? So we see there's that love in quotation marks. After he got what he wanted and satisfied his own lustful desires, now he hates her. The hatred which he hated her was greater than the love which he had loved her. And Amnon said to her, "Get up, go away." But she said to him, "No, because this wrong in sending me away is greater than the other that you would have done to me." Yet he would not listen to her once again. Then he called his young man who attended him. I've underlined that because once again you've got this spoiled brat prince. Not only has his own little house near the king, he's got his own servants. Anything this young man wants, he gets. "Hey, come here, get rid of her. Throw this woman out of my presence and lock the door behind her." That's why I hate this story. I hate rape. I can't. It burns me up, and just reading an old ancient story just infuriates me. Verse 18, now she had a long sleeve garment. By the way, in Hebrew, it's a very colored tunic. It would have had long sleeves, but it would have been like a robe that Joseph had in Genesis. She wore a particular garment that showed she was a pure virgin. That's what the virgins wore. She was a beautiful young woman. She would have probably been one of those women you would have seen and said, "What a solid woman of God. What a lucky guy one day that's going to get to marry such a woman." She dressed right. You can see just from her reasoning, this is a wise woman thinking clearly. She had a long-sleeved garment, for in this manner the virgin daughters of the king dressed themselves in robes. Then his attendant took her out and locked the door behind her. Tamar put ashes on her head and tore her long-sleeved garment, which was on her, because it didn't mean anything to anymore. She's no longer a virgin. She's put ashes on her head, which is to say, "I'm in mourning." She's ripped her garment. Everything that she was 10 minutes prior, she's not, through no fault of her own. Doesn't that make you mad? This is not a woman who asked for it. This is not a woman who did anything except what her daddy told her to do, go serve her brother, whom she probably loved. She might have been totally clueless to what was going to happen, what might happen. And you know what? That's what happens in this world, isn't it? People have decided never to believe in God over issues like this. But here's the crux of the matter. It happens. Innocent people get hurt. They die. Children in the back of a car playing with a little play toy go through a light. Someone crashes through the intersection and the child dies. No fault of the child's own. Or maybe the child doesn't die, but they're quadriplegics. Or maybe they're never the same. Did they do anything wrong? And we say, God, why? Why would you do that? It's not the question to ask. I understand why any of us might ask such a question, but it happens. There's examples from the beginning of time. Why did Cain have to die? I'm sorry, why did Abel have to die? Did Abel do anything wrong? The first unfair thing was that loser Cain was jealous of his brother and killed him. Why, God? Well, we know the answer, don't we? It's that three-letter word, sin. Why do we keep asking? Why, God? We have this idea that everything is supposed to be fair. Everything's supposed to happen the way we think it should. We're idealistic. We certainly want it to be that way, but it's not. And the quicker we grasp that, the less we will shake our fist at God when we don't get our way. Now, I'm a dad. If it happened to my daughter, my wife, my mother, my sisters, I understand. I would be angry, and I would no doubt, because I'm human, Lord, why'd that happen? But it happens. It happens. I had a friend a couple months ago, I told you, just we had dinner with him, and a week later he was dead, 54 years old. And yesterday I'm thumbing through Facebook, and I had another 50-year-old friend who was hitting balls on the golf course, and he just keeled over and died. Left his children, his wife. He's a believer. But I've just been heartbroken over it all last couple of days. I know where he is, and it's beautiful and wonderful. And I called a friend of mine and said, what happened, Lance? He was hitting balls on the range. He just died. But what about his kids? I know where he is. I don't feel sorry for the dead. What about his kids? And they're not young. They can fend for themselves now. But and I have to remind myself, life is not fair. We will all die. We might get a terrible disease. Someone we love. What's worse than us getting sick is if someone we love might get terribly hurt, right? You have to say right with me. Because the sooner we warm up to that, the less likely we'll be to shake our fist when, why did this happen, God? I need to know why. As if knowing the answer why would make our pain any less. God is saying, you live in a fallen world. But we do know this, don't we, that God works out all things for good. I saw Tim Tebow left that the other day as a tweet because I follow Tim. I like Tim. But that's all he said. No ellipsis. And I wanted to write back, Tim, finish the passage. God doesn't work out all things for good. He works out all things for good for those who love Him and who are called according to His purpose. Big difference, isn't it? Are you one who loves Him? If you love Him, you know you're called according to His purpose. Lord, I don't know why you did that. I wouldn't have done it if I was God. But you are and I'm not. What's that great line? Great line. There's many good lines from the movie Rudy. Right? But the great line is from that Catholic priest. When Rudy's saying, I've prayed. Maybe I hadn't prayed enough. And the priest said, no. He said, I know that's not the case. He said, what do you think? He said, I know two things. In all my years of ministry, he said, I know two things. There is a God, and I'm not Him. And he says, prayer is given in our time, but God answers them in His time. Let Him. We have this idea. We're all spiritual tonight, but when things don't go our way, we're just waiting to pounce on God. Why didn't you do it this way, Lord? Hey, 10 minutes ago, you were praising me because I was God. Now you want to do my job. Why don't you just hush? You ever hear God just say that? I do every day. Why don't you just hush, Lance, and praise my holy name? But just hush. Verse 19, Tamar put ashes on her head, tore her long-sleeved garment that was on her. She put her hand on her head and went away, crying aloud as she went. Then Absalom, her brother, said to her, I love this question. He doesn't say, what's wrong with you? Notice question. Has Amnon, your brother, been with you? Does a woman who has gone through what she's gone through, she's torn her garment and she's got ashes on her head. Why would he assume Amnon has been with her? Who assumes that? A, possibility, he knows how wicked Amnon is, and he knew he was capable of that. B, he was part of the conspiracy. Now, I don't know the answer, but it's quite possible. And you'll note later that Absalom makes a move towards the throne, trying to get rid of David, so it's in his character, possibly. Again, possibly. Don't know. It's not told us, but I just think the question is interesting. Has Amnon, your brother, been with you? But now keep silent, my sister. He is your brother. Do not take this matter to heart. Would I have said that? Did Amnon, your brother, do this? Go get my baseball bat. Do not take this to heart. So Tamar remained and was desolate in her brother Absalom's house. There's, Absalom's got his own house too. I mean, if you're third in charge, if you're third heir to the throne, you're probably never going to be king. You're Prince William. It's probably not going to happen. No, William, who's it? Harry. You're Harry. Probably not going to happen for Harry. So I don't know. I'm being unfair to Absalom, but because of what Absalom does later, I don't think you can be unfair to him. Verse 21. Now, when King David heard all these matters, he was angry. Is that right? Who or what was he angry at? What do you think? What's your first thought when he was angry? What do you think he was angry at? His son? Okay. Son? Anyone think something else offhand?
Because he didn't see it.
He didn't see it, was unaware of it. What else? Anybody? So he's just angry, I got something else to do. Man, I'm busy and y'all threw this at me? I hadn't thought about that one. That would be me. You think he's mad at Tamar? Yeah. Could be. You think he could be mad at Tamar? Why'd you go put yourself in that position? Well, Dad, you sent me. And you'll notice that Jonadab, in the shrewdness of Jonadab, makes David liable. Because David sent her over there. That's the worldly wise shrewdness that Jonadab came up with. Hey, get permission from David. And that way, once you do what you do, it's on him. He was angry. It never says who or what he was angry about, but he was angry at something. But Absalom did not speak to Amnon, either good or bad, for Absalom hated Amnon because he had violated his sister Tamar. Now it came about after 2 full years that Absalom had sheep shears in Baal Hazor, which is near Ephraim, and Absalom invited all the king's sons. This is going to be the sheep shearing. We saw this with Nabal and the Abigail account where it's a big festival. Everyone brings their sheep. You shear the sheep. Probably a big party. 2 full years. How many of you have ever gone to bed angry? We've all gone to bed angry. You let anger fester for a day. Maybe it's with your spouse, a child. You know you need to deal with it. Bible says don't let the sun go down in your anger. I mean, unless you got to, let's put this to bed tonight. We'll deal with it in the morning and be done with it. That's the best way. If you can't finish it that night, maybe you get too tired to deal with it. But how about letting it fester for 2 years? Good thing? Mentally, physically, nothing good about that. But you can see that like Jacob before in the passage I described earlier with the rape of Dinah, and Eli, remember Eli wouldn't discipline his sons. Samuel apparently wasn't a very good father, didn't discipline his sons. These were decent men, but didn't discipline their sons. And their own bad example of fathers weren't able to pass down to their own children some sort of a good example, and now you see Amnon kind of in the same thing. David's anger is good, but it's not enough. You know, what did your dad do for you, Tamar? Well, he was mad. Well, that solves that, doesn't it? It was little that the king could do. This is a big problem with David. Well, what's he going to say? How can he speak out and even say this is wrong? This is what happens when you sin like David has done. Point the finger, Amnon, what you did was wrong. That is so twisted. What were you thinking? Well, Dad, let's just bring that back to the roof. When you were up there, what were you thinking, Dad? What can Dad say then? Since David wouldn't deal with the problem, Absalom would. Just like the sons or the brothers of Dinah did because Jacob wouldn't, now the brother will. If God has told us not to let the sun go down in our anger, then after a night, how bad is it after 2 years? Well, it gets worse. Absalom came to the king and said, that would be to David, said, behold, now your servant has sheep shears. Let the king and his servants go with your servant. He's calling himself David's servant, even though his son. In other words, come to the sheep shearing festival with me. You'll be my guest. But the king said to Absalom, no, my son, we should not all go, for we will be a burden to you, burdensome to you. Although we urged him, he would not go, but blessed him. And apparently, Absalom knew David wouldn't go, because his plan doesn't have David there. Then Absalom said, if not, please let my brother Amnon go with us. And the king said to him, why should he go with you? Now you see the density again of David. Earlier he didn't know his son Amnon enough to know that he was capable of raping his daughter, raping David's daughter, raping his sister. Now he's got to know that Absalom is furious with his brother for raping his sister. And so what do you want Amnon to go for? I imagine Absalom was we know he was a beautiful man. I mean, handsome as all get out. He's also apparently got a big smile, and he's a bit of a schmoozer. And he's probably saying something like, yeah, Amnon's at life of the party, Dad. Please let Amnon go. But I love the way David's going, why do you want him? Apparently Absalom was the one raising sheep. The rest of them didn't seem to care. Why do you want Amnon there? But David's not seeing. He's still aloof, too aloof to see what's going on with his kids. How many of you dads think you know what's going on with your kids? I mean, sometimes you don't find out for years, and when you do, you're thinking, what kind of a dad was I? Don't be stupid. Your kids are up to something. I was the squeakiest clean kid you ever heard of, and I was always up to something too. I had contrived ways that I could do the things my friends were doing, but I didn't. One night I did sneak out just to prove that I could. And it felt good. I did it. I got out. I got back in. Went down for breakfast the next day. Mom and Dad didn't know it. But the reason they didn't know it is because they 100% trusted me. And I remember thinking about that as a teenager. I've got my parents around my little finger. They believe anything I do. And it was true. I wasn't a troublemaker. And I only did that once. And I went down the street and came back. I didn't have anything to do. I did skip school one day. I skipped school one day. I got in the parking lot. A buddy of mine pulled up and said, Waldy, let's skip. Deerbrook Mall was brand new back in that day. We went to Deerbrook Mall. We walked around. By the time it was noon, we were back at the house, and I said, what are we going to do? What'd we do? We went back to school. We wrote each other notes and went back to school. That's how. And we got back in. Now, silly, dumb, that's a squeaky clean kid. But my mind worked just like everyone else's. Don't be naive. Don't think your kids are perfect. Don't think they're not. Don't ever say, my child isn't capable of that. Every human being is capable of murder, rape, the worst of the worst. If you don't think so, you're the one living in a dream world. Question everything your teenager is up to. Don't ever think that they're not. I mean it. Why? Because you want to be a jerk? No, because you love them. Their frontal lobe is not quite developed yet. They don't think about tomorrow. You're their parents. Look out after them. These guys are young. Amnon and Absalom think they own the world. And David's going, oh, okay, sure. They're good kids. No, they're not. And he had no idea. Too aloof. An aloof parent is a bad thing to be. King said to him, why should he go with you? But Absalom urged him, and Amnon and all the king's sons, let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. Absalom commanded his servants, saying, see now, when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say to you, strike Amnon, then put him to death. So here's another indicator of Amnon's character. Absalom knows he's going to go to this thing and get drunk. But we know he's going to get drunk. He's not just going to attend. He's not a nice guy. He's on the prowl. He's a lion waiting to pounce on women, even his own sister, and he's a drunkard as well. And Absalom knows he's going to get drunk. when you see him get that way and you hear me say strike him, put him to death. Now we see a little bit more about Absalom. He doesn't mind killing his own brother. Do not fear. Have I not myself commanded you? Be courageous and be valiant. The servants of Absalom, they're underlined there because he has his own servants. He did to Amnon just as Absalom had commanded them. Then all the king's sons arose and each mounted his mule and fled. They killed him and they took off. Now it was while they were on the way that the report came to David saying, Absalom has struck down all the king's sons and not one of them is left. How did that get out? That's just, you see that people haven't changed, have they? One person dies and by the time it gets to David, they're all dead. The king arose, verse 31, tore his clothes and lay on the ground, and all his servants were standing by with clothes torn. Jonadab, there he is, he apparently didn't go to the party. Son of Shimea, David's brother, responded, do not let my lord suppose they have put to death all the young men, the king's sons, for Amnon alone is dead, because by the intent of Absalom this has been determined since the day he violated his sister Tamar. Now therefore do not let my lord the king take the report to heart, namely all the king's sons are dead, for only Amnon is dead. Verse 34, now Absalom had fled, and the young man who was the watchman raised his eyes and looked, and behold, many people were coming from the road behind him by the side of the mountain. Jonadab said to the king, behold, the king's sons have come, according to your servant's word. So it happened. It's a lot of words just to say, only Amnon's dead. Passage closes out, as soon as he had finished speaking, behold, the king's sons came and lifted their voices and wept. The king's sons, these are, we know some of their names, we'll go through all of them here, but they're there to say, to mourn. They probably saw Amnon die. Verse 37, Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Amihud, the king of Geshur. By the way, that's his grandpappy. Remember, he married Maacah, who was the daughter of this king. He fled to his grandfather, and David mourned for his son every day. So Absalom had fled and gone to Geshur and was there 3 years. The heart of the king longed to go to Absalom. We don't know why. It doesn't say, did he love Absalom and he wants to be with Absalom, or did he want to get Absalom? It says, for he was comforted concerning Amnon since he was dead. In other words, he had mourned over Amnon. He had gotten past Amnon. Now he either wanted to be with Absalom because he loved him, or he wanted to get him. It doesn't say. The language doesn't move towards it. Now you look at a story like this, and this is R-rated at best. It's not something that you want your kids watching. It's a soap opera scene, and yet it's in the Bible. The Bible doesn't gloss over the sins of its saints, does it? We see this. This is David's family. This is the man after God's own heart family. I mean, what would you think of me if you didn't know me, even if you did, and all you knew about me was my kids were like this? Would you say, well, I'm sure the man is fine? We don't normally say that. When the kids are like that, it says something about mom and dad. Not always, but oftentimes. And here's what David's kids are doing. Raping each other, killing each other, conspiring against each other. Even there's a cousin in there, moving around and making things happen. So as we observe, note number one, evil men are always scheming. You can see Amnon is always trying to figure out a way to get what he wanted. They don't listen to reason. They just keep on sinning. And as a counselor, I can tell you that's absolutely the case. Until they come to know Christ, nothing you tell them, no reasoning for them. I remember as a counselor, I used to go into the schools and get kids out of school and counsel them. Their parents wouldn't even bring them to the office, so I had permission to go into the schools, get them out, keep them between 15 and 30 minutes. Some of them, I remember one kid, I just had him jump up and down on the curb for 20 minutes just to get energy out so he could go back to class and sit still. Others, I had to talk out of blowing up the school. Literally, I had to talk this one kid out. He was going to blow up the school because he was getting picked on, and he said, I'm going to get those people, and they're never going to touch me again. I had to talk one kid out of killing his dad. He was going to go home because that 14-year-old boy I'm talking to, he said, because that man, his word, that man has beat me for the last time. That's me trying to, now I'm at a secular counseling agency. I'm trying to share Christ with them, trying to get through to them. It was illegal. Of course, I could have lost my $18,000 a year job at the time, but I went ahead and did it anyway. But I realized then, I'm not getting through to these people. It's part of the steps that took me into the pastorate. So I want to preach Christians. I want to share the gospel, of course, but I want to preach to Christians and where it does sink in. But I noticed that it just bounced off no matter what I said to these people. Fleshly lusts are their own punishment. what they long for and desire. These fleshly lusts war against the body and soul as they did Amnon, and they became his ultimate defeat. Aloof fathers, aloof meaning fathers that don't have a clue what's going on in their families. They always regret the opportunities they missed to parent their children. I say always, that's a stretch. Most fathers, when they are older and realize they could have spent more time with their children, wish they had. And so I tell you, young fathers, don't have that regret. Be with your kids. Discipline your children, and that is if you love them. And I mean it, discipline them. I don't mind saying it. I don't mind it being on a recording. Spank them. Spank them properly. When you spank a little child, if you spank them properly, A, they know who's boss. B, they don't remember it when they're 5 or 6 or 7, other than that mom and dad are in charge. And C, they become, have the potential to, at least the potential to understand more than a child who's not disciplined, the law. Just being obedient to a society. Listening to the rules in a public school. Listening to the rules of society. Discipline your children. I've had parents come and told me things like, spanking doesn't help my children. You ain't hitting them hard enough. Pull down the diaper. Don't spank a baby with a diaper on. That's what grown men wear, or big boys wear, when they know they're going to get spanked by their coach. That doesn't work, but don't hit them either. You see a whole baby's body movement. It just takes a little piece of leather. Whick, whick. The kid screams bloody murder. They're over it in about 10 seconds. And now they know who's boss. Keep doing it. If you love them, the Bible says it. You will not kill them. If you love your children, discipline them. We're seeing examples in the Bible and in the modern society of children that have never been disciplined. We live in a society that would take what I'm saying and have me arrested for child abuse. I can put up my 2 children in front of them and say, yeah, some of them, they remember. So one of them got spankings into adulthood. No, she didn't. She is a wonderful and fantastic young lady, and I couldn't be more proud of her. But she was a child. My boy, same way. I was the same way. My dad tells me nightmare stories of what he did. He said, Lance, there was a day when I was taking the belt and the buckle came out of my hand, wrapped around and hit you in the eye, and we didn't send you to school for a week. We didn't want to get arrested. And I'm thinking to myself, I said, did it hurt? He said, you wouldn't stop crying. I have no recollection of it. But what I do remember is you don't mess with my dad. And my mom, all 5 foot tall of her, you definitely don't mess with her and that breadboard. She loved the breadboard. And I love my mother. I love my father. And I knew then, as I know now, they loved me and that they were shaping the man. Doesn't mean that I became a great man, but I knew who was in charge. David didn't do this. Distinguish lust from love, not just in sex, but lust for something you feel like you must have, a car, a house. Distinguish lust from love. To lust for someone without loving them. Know for certain that once lust is satisfied, the hatred that follows reveals that there was never any love. Hatred that follows. You got what you wanted in lust, and what follows is hatred. That's what Amnon learned. It cost him his life. The object of your lust and affection, don't call it love. And when you think of it in terms of possessions, I need that new car, I need that new house, I need that new whatever. If you've given yourself all these things, you have to look back and say, did that scratch my itch? Did that make my life wonderful? Wow, I finally have everything. I'll never ask for anything again. It doesn't. Things don't do that. Sex doesn't do that. In fact, David's son, born from Bathsheba, grew up to tell us in Ecclesiastes, he's saying, I've tried it all. I've done everything the human mind wants to do. And he says, I'm telling you, it doesn't satisfy. It's all, what's the word, folks? Hevel. Grace doesn't run in the parental blood, unfortunately, right? Sin does. Parents must deal with that sin in their children, as I said earlier. All of our good qualities, maybe they're in there, but what we notice is all of our bad qualities. Isn't it convicting to see that in your kids? If we've sinned the way David sinned, How can we speak out against those who sin in such a way? We can't. That's why dads and our spiritual leaders must be above reproach. And I've got that passage this Sunday on the character traits of church leaders, the elders. Is it there to be above reproach? A dad who has done what he's trying to tell his kids not to do can do so and should do so, but only if he has repented of his own sins of the past. But if he or she, the mom, are still living in those sins, how can you discipline your children and tell them not to? Your kids are way smarter than that. They know. They see it. They know what hypocrisy is. False friends are exposed when they fail to encourage us to do right. They encourage sin. So note that, especially young people. If there's someone that you hang with that is not encouraging you away from sin, but encouraging you to do it, they're not a friend. Jonadab was not a friend to Amnon. Jonadab should have been the guy that said, look, that's sick, dude. You can't be with your sister. Yeah, she's beautiful and all, but that's way too twisted. You can't do that. That'll ruin you. You're the king. You're the heir to the throne. You can't do that. But he didn't. Encouraged him. Hey, I got an idea. And we'll implicate your dad too. There's a lot of those people out there. And you might even be an adult and have someone that says it. Don't. They may make you laugh and you may have some sort of a nice banter with, but mark them and make certain they don't influence you. They're out to get you. And if Satan sees it, he'll use them. No doubt Amnon lay in wait for Tamar, like a lion waiting to pounce on his prey. I hate that. I think about my daughter when she goes out, or even my wife. Remember, used to be my sisters, and because I know men, I know boys, I know what they're after. I even told Brooke she had a homecoming date with she and her friend, and bring those young men over to the house. I didn't plan to say what I said, and I'm glad I said it because they never called her back. According to her, they wouldn't even speak to her. It was her and her friend and these two guys, two nice-looking young men, and I essentially told them, I know what's on your mind. I know what boys think, and I'll kill you. Again, I didn't plan to say that, but it came out, and it felt good when I said it. I'll be honest. Would I have? Maybe a little bit. I would have killed them a little bit, maybe. But that's my thought. That's my baby. That's my little girl. And I know that I would feel that, and I'm not trying to justify that. I know we laugh at it, but that's what's out there waiting. Young ladies, don't think for a moment that's not out there. Be alert. Don't be clueless. A mace can here, pepper spray here, Uzi over here, be able to bring them both out like this. What does 1 Peter 5:8 say? It says, beware of your adversary, the devil, who prowls around like a roaring lion seeking to devour. It's out there. It's waiting. Not just to trip us up to sin, but to get us, to have us. A dad is supposed to be there to protect. And a dad protects first and foremost, not with guns, not with baseball bats, but with prayer. With prayer and with the love he gives in teaching and loving his daughter. That doesn't mean, as I said earlier, that you're now protected from all things. Bad things happen. We live in a fallen world. But prayer. Don't be deceived. Galatians 6, 7 and 8, 7 to 10. This is to David. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, this he will also reap. For the one who sows to his own flesh will from his flesh reap corruption. But the one who sows to the Spirit, capital S, will from the Spirit reap eternal life. Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. So then, while we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, and especially to those who are of the household of faith. David illustrates, God is not going to be mocked. We will reap what we sow. And so what we sow reveals who we are. What David sowed, does that represent his entire life? Adultery and murder? No, it doesn't, does it? It's sure a black spot on his life. Lance, yes, sir?
On your last slide, I like the fact that it's in due time.
In due time. In God's time, right? May not be in our time. Thank you. Good observation. In due time. Want to reap a blessing? Sow a spiritual seed. You're not gonna reap any kind of harvest if you're not throwing something out there. Sow a spiritual seed. Hosea 8:7 is sow the wind, reap the whirlwind. We will reap the same kind as what we sow. If you're gonna reap, you're not gonna reap by having adultery, committing adultery, and sleeping around and sowing wild oats. You're not gonna reap this great, wonderful married life one day. Your life will be full of garbage. God forgives it, washes it clean. But these kinds of sexual problems will follow you the rest of your days, even in your marriage. And when your children say, "Dad, tell me about your pure life," you can't do it. We will reap in a different season than when we sow. It doesn't happen right away, does it? The good or the bad. David got to go and have a crown put on his hand in Ammon, and got to see a few good things. His child died. Another child was born. God loved him. Solomon, looks like everything's good. That's all, right, Lord? I have to say, when we used to spank Daniel, we grabbed the cute little guy, and he was wiggly. You got to grab him. Sometimes I'd miss him. I might just catch him, and he would always go, "That's all. That's all, Dad. That's all." I see David saying that. "That's all, right, Lord?" No, it's not. It's only just begun, David. What you did, what you will reap from what you sowed. Sometimes we reap more than we sow. We might say David committed this sin. You might think that God, you know, just would give him one or two things. He didn't, did he? It went on for the rest of David's life. Sometimes that happens with us. Be careful. And on the good side, sow a little bit, reap a whole lot. But sow something. Something good, that is. Forget the past harvests. Focus on the present ones. Whatever you did in the past, it's over. Move on to another harvest. Sow more spiritual seeds. Move on. And finally, God forgives. We know that. We trust in Christ for that. We're guaranteed that. But we still reap what we've sown, both good and bad. Don't miss that. David illustrates it. Your own life may illustrate it. So let this horrible chapter in the Bible be a lesson to us and a reminder. God is not to be mocked. We will reap, as John said, in due time. All right, let's pray. Lord, we thank you. It's hard to say thank you for such horrors that we read, and yet we know that you work all things out for good. Even this horrible situation that happened 3,000 years ago, we're able to take good. We're able to see what happened. We're able to understand in your own character and be warned. And I pray that we would not only take the warning and heed it, but pass on the warning to others, each of us. And know that you mean business. You forgive, and you are a loving God. But there is a consequence for our sins. Thank you for that, Lord. I pray that it would dissuade us and deter us. And in this ancient story, Lord, you have allowed us to read and glean from. Teach us more from it. As we watch David's life take a terrible sour turn toward the south over the next few weeks, I pray that you would continually teach us. And going back to that mistake he made, the sin that he committed, may we think twice as to the things that put themselves in front of us and tell us, that try to entice us to do what we know is wrong. Give us the strength we need with your Spirit that indwells us. This we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.